which is about 1 in 6 people that experience troubles with fertility.
It's still interesting though, because infertility is getting worse.
I would have thought it'd be way more scientific than that.
And they're all just like really like drunk, and they're not swimming, they're like hitting the walls, they're just not knowing where they're going.
Well, yes, that question has not been answered, so.
Eating nuts to help your nuts.
So Culture Journal.
The worst instances of research fraud uncovered in a British university.
Snitches get stitches, like.
No, I'd honestly be stressed. She saw someone copying, pasting, editing.
I'd be like, girl, what are you doing? What are you doing? Stop right there. I'd call her out.
You're listening to the So Cultured podcast, where we bring you the latest science and tech goss, served with a side of piping hot laboratory.
We're your hosts, Liv,
Yaz,
and Taz.
Three girls with a passion for science and tech.
Look, we've got the credentials, so we should know what we're talking about.
We're asking the dumb questions so you don't have to, and obviously all opinions are our own. We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode, and let's get into it.
Hey everyone, or welcome back to episode 5 of So Cultured. We're so glad you're joining us for a brand new week.
Yeah, super excited for this one. I've got a really cool topic that I want to be talking about. But before I get into that, I wanted to ask you a really important question.
Okay.
I just want to know, am I the only one that does this? Because I feel like I can't be alone. So either you girls are with me on this, or the listeners are. But last night I was chilling, watching Netflix, and I open a bar of Cadbury chocolate, like the big ones, because yep, Cadbury's is my actual fave.
Same.
But like, do you eat the whole bar in one sitting, or do you just like break off one piece and just sit and like, you know, think, oh yeah, I'm going to be good. Like, that's it. Because I have the whole damn thing and I just don't know how to control it.
Well, actually what I will do is I will eat the whole bar minus one row, and then somehow I feel like, well, I didn't eat the whole thing. So, but yeah, how do people stop? I don't get that. Do you know what? My mum, if you buy her a box of chocolates on Christmas, they will be there next November. Like, there will still be some there.
Oh,
and I'm just
God.
Like, who are you? Like, I don't understand. I would literally eat them that day, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, me and my sister, this is a great example. Me and my sister are like polar opposites when it comes to this, right? It would always frustrate me so much when Easter rolled around. We would get our like chocolate Easter eggs and things like that. And then I would immediately eat mine. Like, there was no like saving it for another time. It was literally like I would have this mound of chocolate, and growing up, I would just eat the whole thing, usually in the first day that I got it. Whereas my sister would literally be like, no, I'm saving mine. And I would
for
always
what?
Like,
what would
be watching, and I would have to face her chocolate every day in the kitchen and just be staring at it. I'm like, she's not even eating it. And a lot of the times she would leave it so long that it would usually be the next year.
And then it starts going grey.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, if
you know,
not going to eat
gray.
It, I'll eat it.
Yeah.
But like, out of spite, she'd always be like, no, I'm just going to save it. But you can't have it because it's mine. And it's like, oh my God. I don't know how
I would eat
to
it.
Do that.
I would eat it, especially if I'm on my period. Like, I'm eating it. Do you know what, Taz, when you were saying that, I started cracking up because it reminded me of once. You know how like... I don't know if you guys ever done this, but at Christmas when we were younger, we used to put Advent chocolates on the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I literally just have this really vivid memory of when I was younger that I ate all of the chocolates off the tree. And my mum went mental at me. Like, I just remember like her having such a go at me. She was like, why have you eaten all the chocolates? And I was just like, well, they were literally there on the tree. Like, why would I not? So
she's thinking you've ruined Christmas.
Literally, like, she was just like, oh, you're not going to get any for the rest of the month. And I was like, well, I had them all tonight. What can I say?
We didn't have Advent chocolate on our tree. It was like at my nan's house, she always bought like chocolate baubles and would like hang them on the tree. Mm. And like every time we'd go around her house, she'd be like, oh, yeah, you can have a chocolate from the tree. I think one time we did exactly the same, Liv. We just ate all the chocolate and like left the like silver metal wrapping attached to the rubber and left it like on the tree still, so to like cover our tracks, but obviously it didn't work.
Taz, I find it so funny that you said you'd just leave the wrappers of the chocolate baubles just on the tree, because if I was a parent, I would just laugh at my children. I wouldn't be able to discipline them because I'd be thinking, same hun, like I literally would have just eaten all those chocolates.
Yeah, no, literally.
To be fair, I'd kind of admire how intelligent they were, you know. I feel like that's pretty smart of them to do. But I don't think I'll be having kids anytime soon, so I don't have to think about that, to be fair.
Yeah, to be fair, I feel like as we're kind of approaching our 30s, it is known that our fertility rate drops. I think it drops after the age of 21. I was in a reproductive biology lecture at my undergrad, and the lecturer announced that. And as I was sitting in the room, I was 21, and everyone just looked at me to be like, oh, hun, that's really sad.
Oh my God.
And I was just shocked. Like, I actually felt hurt because I'm not in any position right now.
No.
Or no way near ready for kids.
No, not at all. I don't want to hear this.
But does
right
it
now
stress you out? Do you ever think, like, absolutely, will yeah I get to a point where I need to, like, freeze eggs?
Yeah, I think so. I try not to think about it, but when I do think about it, I get really stressed and I'm like, oh my God. But I just really can't see myself having kids anytime soon.
It's so annoying that, like, women have, like, this biological clock and you're like, feel the pressure to have kids at a certain age, where men don't have that because they're just they don't have a biological clock. So it's really irritating that they don't they're not constrained by that sort of thing.
Well, that might not actually be true, Taz. That brings us on to our science topic really nicely.
Okay, yeah, so you left us on a bit of a cliffhanger there. Tell us more.
Well, I feel like women's infertility is talked about so often, and even like you said, we're on this biological clock, but actually men's sperm count has been decreasing worldwide. So it's not to do with necessarily this biological clock like women have after the age of 21. It could be to do with a lot of other factors. But I guess before we get into that, do you guys actually know what infertility is or what it's defined by, or do you want me to explain that?
Yeah, I feel like infertility is one of those words that I hear all the time. But again, like we said in last week's episode, it's also one of those that if I had to define it, I wouldn't know. So yes, please break it down for us.
Well, it basically means that if you've been having unprotected sex or intercourse for over a period of a year and you've not been able to get pregnant, then you would be classed as infertile.
Wow, is that it?
Yeah, literally.
I would have thought it'd be way more scientific than that.
No, literally. The only thing that it does say online is that for women over 35, they can be considered infertile and be checked as soon as like 6 months after not getting pregnant of having sex.
Oh,
so okay. I think it varies depending on your age. But yeah, genuinely, like if you're just not conceiving, then you're pretty much considered
infertile. Okay, well,
infertile.
Like if I would have had to write down a definition of infertile in a test, then I think I would have passed. Because I would have been something like that.
Okay, so what exactly causes it? We know the definition, but like what can be the causes for infertility?
The causes can typically vary, and it's mostly defined as damaged or blocked fallopian tubes, which again, I feel like that's a word that I always hear, but that just is the passage where eggs travel from the ovaries to the uterus. Or it could be to do with like a lack of regular ovulation or even like endometriosis. Mm-hmm. But also that's kind of targeted towards women. Mm-hmm. But it also, in men can be responsible for infertility. And that's because of like low sperm count, or the quality of sperm mm-hmm. is also low. So it could mean that these little sperm babies are just really struggling to swim. So they have reduced motility.
Yeah.
And that can also really impact the ability to conceive.
Okay, so I feel like it's the main definition surrounds women, but like, do you have a breakdown on the numbers between infertility in men and then infertility in women?
Yeah, I found this one to be really interesting because, like you say, even for me, like just hearing it from other people, I think it's always typically been pointed towards women that have this issue. And what I found really interesting is that the World Health Organization says that it's about 17.5% of the adult population in general, which is about one in six people that experience wow. troubles with fertility. But when you then look at a breakdown between men and women, it actually is like a split of a third. So mm-hmm. a third of the reasons could be women alone, which I feel like makes sense because yeah. we hear about that often. A third could be from it being like unidentified or both are the problem. Mm-hmm. But then it is literally also a third of infertility problems could be from men alone as well.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting, especially the cases where they can't identify if it's actually a male or the female that's causing the issue. Maybe later on we can delve into why that might be. But for now, do we know why, like the reasons behind why there's this, I guess, like rise in infertility?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to understand what actually goes on. There was a study from 1974 that compared their results to a previous study that was done 23 years earlier. And it said that there had been a drop in over 50% of the number of sperm in the samples from the study. Yeah, literally. Like, how can that be over such a short period of time? And I feel like that was a while ago as well.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that is true. So I wonder if it's like decreased, like how much it's decreased by now.
Yeah, literally.
Well, another study more recently wanted to do a meta-analysis. So it's like a big review on loads of different studies. So they took 185 different experiments that were happening on a global scale because you do want to understand more from like a worldwide mm-hmm. perspective. Mm-hmm. And they analyzed loads of different men from these studies and this is literally an insane figure. It says that it suggests there's a 1.5% decrease in sperm count every single year.
Is this study done on healthy participants or is it only done on people who are like infertile? So in other words, is infertility getting worse or is like fertility getting worse?
I think that's such a good point. I think the previous study that I mentioned from 1974 that did target people who had gone in for treatment for infertility. Mm-hmm. So that was already slightly biased. Mm-hmm. But from this 185 studies, I haven't actually delved into what each individual study did mm-hmm. and who their participants were. So I think it is important to look at the different sample collection and maybe just take these numbers with a slight pinch of salt because it could be a little bit
biased. It's still interesting though, because infertility is getting worse. Either way, it's getting worse, you know.
Yeah, true. Okay, yeah, so let's do the math on this, right? So if we've got 1.5% decrease in sperm count per year, how many years until, if that was to continue at the rate that it is, there would be, like, virtually no sperm in, or, like, yeah, virtually no sperm in
Yeah, pretty much. Like it would get to zero because it would be like a change cumulatively.
So what's over, that like?
1.5% decrease.
Yeah. So what's that like? 20 years.
Yeah, I
and
reckon
what's,
so.
What the hell is what is causing it?
Well, we obviously mentioned previously a biological clock, but it's unclear if it is an age thing. But the studies are pointing the finger at more environmental factors rather than the age-related issues. And it actually seems like there are so many different causes for the decrease in sperm counts. And I honestly think sometimes when you get scientific papers or research going on, people are probably just like, do you know what? Let me just ask this question. Does X affect Y? And they're associating it with sperm count. So, for example, people have looked at different pollutants from plastics, such as endocrine disrupting chemicals or EDCs, and they can influence hormonal signals, like the amount of alcohol, smoking, drugs.
Is that this was actually my main PhD project was looking at how air pollution influences epigenetics. It's a very and actually in a lot of my research, I read loads of studies talking about how air pollution negatively impacts sperm counts, or well, mainly infertility. But there was a few studies looking at how it influences sperm counts.
I think pollution often gets like not thought of, because even to do with the plastics, I think it's not just plastics of pollutants, it's also pesticides mm-hmm. and stuff, so it could be what you're consuming.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just think the list could go on, so I don't think it's an exhaustive list. There's not like every people haven't done the studies on everything mm-hmm. but actually a lot more recently people are looking into how your diet can negatively impact the sperm count.
That's interesting. What aspects of your diet?
So it's mainly ultra processed foods. So I think that's often what a lot more people in the Western diets are having. And it's a lot sort of, it can be cheaper, it can be more readily accessible. And I feel like that is definitely a contribution.
Right. And that's interesting because you would link that to like, as sperm counts are decreasing, the consumption of like ultra processed foods or like maybe more unhealthy diets is also increasing. Like if you look at what you're eating now compared to what you used to eat maybe like 15 years ago, like there is a stark difference between what you eat now because, yeah, like you say, these foods are like more readily available, they're cheaper, cost of living and all that. So yeah, that is interesting. Yeah,
definitely. But I think there could be so many different aspects to it. And this one of the particular studies that I was looking at actually showed that you could have a drop in your sperm count by 6.3% if you have an increase of 5 centimeters in your waist circumference. So weight definitely has an impact on your sperm count.
Interesting. And again, that comes back to like diet, obviously, doesn't it, as well? Yeah,
exactly. So they found that people that are more obese or have more body fat, it actually causes more inflammation. Mm-hmm. And you get this like production of inflammatory molecules. And when they're produced, it can actually reduce the amount of testosterone that your body makes. Mm-hmm. And also it can produce reactive oxygen species or ROS, which are produced to respond to the inflammation. And then this can lead to damage in the DNA, in the sperm nucleus, and it can all contribute to the loss of the sperm count, the function, motility, and viability. So it definitely is like coming back down to the diet.
That's really interesting because obviously I've just got a new job and my part of my job is looking at the microbiome and how supplementing that with like a diet that's based on like lots of high fermentable fiber, fruits, vegetables, cereals, and like mm-hmm. Oily fish and things can influence bacteria, like healthy bacteria, to grow in your gut. And that bacteria creates like metabolites mm-hmm. that reduce inflammation like systemically, like in your whole body. So it's interesting that you say that. Okay. And like how your diet is massively linked to inflammatory molecules and things like that and how that affects sperm count and things, because it seems like it really does come down to what you eat. And maybe it's something to do with the microbiome as well, because they say like ultra processed foods means you have like less diverse species in your gut, and then that leads to like bowel problems, inflammatory problems and things like that as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important to address because, well, I don't know enough research on the microbiome to know how that would affect sperm counts, but as we're seeing, there's so many things that could influence it that I wouldn't be surprised if that is one of the factors that are negatively impacting sperm count in men.
I was going to say, I wonder if there's a study that's like directly looking at that. So they look at like two groups of like infertile men who are like separated in some way by weight or diet, and then see if they can like look further into this. Because I feel like you're right, there's a lot of studies that will correlate X with Y and say like, oh, this is mm-hmm. impacting this. Like in episode 3, I was talking about like when we were talking about epigenetics, and I said like literally every single thing is being linked to epigenetics, like, and it's growing. Like I told you about the crazy study where they just linked coffee and tea consumption with epigenetics. And I feel like that is kind of a bit of a problem in science, is that I think a lot of studies are making these links, but I often think, do the researchers have any intention to actually explain these links, or are they just making links just to publish a paper? Do you know what I mean? Anyway, I just went on a tangent there, but yeah. It would be interesting to see if they could have like a proper controlled study where they look at different diets in infertile men and actually see why it's causing these problems, right? Like why is it leading to either like a decreased motility or a lower sperm count?
Yeah.
Yeah. This study stated in their introduction of the research was that other scientists have tried to target specific components of ultra processed food, whether that's artificial sweeteners, sugars, different components of it. That is the reason for the change that they're seeing in sperm count. But then this study in particular did just like look at ultra processed food as a way and a method of defining like how sperm count changes.
Yeah, which sometimes is all you've got to work with, you know, like sometimes you have to do these like I don't want to say like worse studies, but you have to do the smaller, like less robust studies to get funding for the bigger ones, I guess.
And I think as well, this paper had suggested that from their knowledge, they think they're the only ones that have done this type of study, which is also really interesting. So like you say, they have to build upon it somehow.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into like the actual study. Like what exactly did they do? What measurements did they do on the sperm? Like how did they do it?
So they actually took 200 healthy males between 18 and 40 years old. So I feel like with this study, they're already biasing it because they've used people no older than 40. So we haven't got that aspect of age or biology, which I guess is good because they've cut that like variability out. But also supposedly men aren't meant to change, or their sperm count doesn't necessarily decline that quickly with age.
But also, aren't they looking at like the age where you're potentially going to have children, because it's a fertility study? So 18 to 40 to me is like the ages that you would maybe looking to have children. Obviously people have children outside those ages, but maybe that's why.
Yeah, true, that's a good point. But this study wasn't targeting people from that were being treated for infertility. These were advertised on flyers. It could have been in your GP surgery, in hospitals, in pharmacies, and you could sign up that way. But if you wanted to be part of this study, you had to abstain from any sexy time. And then...
Yeah, right. How many of them stuck to that?
It was for 3 days.
Okay, maybe.
Do you think?
It's not that hard, surely.
You can tell Taz is like in a super like long-term relationship. Yeah. I'm like somewhere in the middle, and then Yaz is
we won't go there. My dating life is just non-existent. I think I'm going to have to freeze my eggs, guys. But honestly, this is sounding worse because whoever I date anyway, that sounds like their sperm count is going to be non-existent by the time I'm ready. But anyway, they had to abstain for 3 days. Whether any listeners think that that's possible or not, or the truth, like that's apparently what they did. And then they had to do the deed. I just don't know what I can say on this podcast. Did they like what word terminology do I use? So they did the deed, you know, the thing.
Yeah.
Or they had like, let's just be real here, like to be frank, like they okay, anyway, they collected the semen in a little tube, like the ones you pee in, I'm assuming, and then sent it to the scientists.
Okay, can I just say that this, I'm gonna use this, I'm marking this moment in this podcast, this is season one episode 5. I'm marking this moment as in a few weeks or a few months' time, I'm going to tell you guys the best gossip I will ever tell you on this podcast. I can't tell you it right now, but I am going to tell you, and I'm just going to remind you of this exact moment. That's all I'm going to say for now. So just stay tuned for gossip sections in series 2, because I have a story about this.
So yeah, they collect the sperm in a little tube and they do some analysis on it. And the way that they can actually test the differences in sperm count, in concentration, the volume of the sample. I actually don't know how to talk about this stuff. I find it so cringe that I could not work in this field.
Well, do you know what? I was going to say earlier that my best friend who I did my PhD with, Ellie, she actually studied sperm shape and how it influences infertility. And it was so interesting what she used to do. So she used to image sperm used to collect samples. She then imaged them under the microscope, collect it all and put it all into this software to like learn about the shape and about how like different parts of the sperm influence different things.
I think that would be quite cool to see them all, because in this study they used a software that hooks up to a microscope that's called CASA, and it's a computer assisted sperm analysis. And I honestly find it so crazy that people have made software that specifically analyzes sperm. It's needed, but like
another thing I was going to say is that the software she worked on is literally her supervisor like made this whole imaging software specifically for looking at sperm shape. Like that was literally exactly what he did. It was so cool. Like I used to watch her and I was like, oh my god, that actually looks so cool.
Yeah, because they must swim quite fast. I don't know, is that relative to...
Yeah.
It's not like a cheetah sprint, but I don't know how fast it is.
I actually don't know. Like, that's a good question. I'm going to Google that.
Because also, now we're talking about it and how diet and food affects it, I'm now just thinking there's going to be a sperm that has, like, been affected by smoking or alcohol and is just
one sperm out of the whole thing. Yeah.
One sperm, or like all of the sperm, and they're all just like really like drunk and they're not swimming, they're like hitting the walls, they're just not knowing where they're going. I wonder if they can get impacted by alcohol.
I'm sorry, just going back, it's definitely not comparable to a cheetah sprint, because the swimming speed of a human sperm in fluid is approximately 5 micrometers per minute. So in theory, sperm could swim through the cervical canal in a matter of minutes or hours. That's a wide,
but if you think of size there. Is that the same, is it then comparable if you take size true, into
true,
account
true. I don't know,
could that's they a... be the fastest swimming yeah not yeah. swimming fastest yeah. moving
I don't know that sounds
thing.
Pretty that's, slow to me that's... I'm not gonna lie.
Well, yes, that question has not been answered, so you could definitely pursue that line of research.
Okay, any funders want to fund my new project?
You could work it out, like relative speed.
Okay, stay tuned.
Yeah, to be fair, I was about to say you could literally just do a little math equation, work that out. If any of our listeners like maths and you want to figure that out, please do. We'd love to know what's faster, cheetah or sperm.
Okay, I feel like we've done a lot of like talking about like how they collected the sample and what we're seeing previously, but like what did the study actually find?
The study basically got the 200 participants to monitor their food intake over a year, and this was itemized using something called a NOVA system, and it classifies food into 4 different groups, whether it's like ultra processed, mm-hmm. it's processed, or it's minimally processed. And people just had to itemize that and write down when they consumed those types of foods. And then after the study had compiled all of the data from the participants, it actually showed that participants who had a higher intake of ultra processed foods showed that they had a decrease in sperm quality after that duration. And then what's also interesting is that the study suggests that if you have a minimal or a lower ultra processed food consumption, it could even be beneficial for the quality of semen.
That's weird.
So it's like all to do with your diet, that if you switched up your diet, essentially you could, like if you switched up for the better.
You know how you're saying? So you're saying that some people who had minimal ultra processed foods,
yeah,
they found in the study that that was actually led to like better quality sperm. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, do you think that's actually true, or do you just think it's that the people who have lower intake of ultra processed foods are more likely to, for example, eat healthier foods like vegetables? So it's actually that eating food like vegetables in higher quantities is better for your sperm rather than eating a little bit of ultra processed foods.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think with this study, they would have taken the starting sperm count from the first like day of the year and then at the end of the year. But I do understand in the sense that it might just be that they had generally like better quality
diet,
and it could fluctuate over because they've already got a better diet. And I think that is the problem with a study like this, is that people are itemizing what they've eaten themselves. So for example, if I just scoffed down 2 Big Macs and fries and stuff, I would not write that down. I'd be like, yeah, I had one cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like you're more inclined to lie on something like this. I don't know how they get past that.
I don't think you can with self-reported data. That's why people turn their nose up at studies that use self-reported data, but sometimes it's all you've got.
Yeah, exactly. But that was only one study. And there are other studies where people have looked at trying to improve the fertility in men. For example, as I mentioned earlier, people that have more body fat or are considered obese have more inflammation, which can causes this reactive oxygen species. And it's known that antioxidants, which you guys may have heard of before, are actually involved in targeting and kind of tackling these reactive oxygen species. And they can be found in loads of different food types. So another study actually gave men more antioxidants in the form of a handful of walnuts and some other nuts. They actually gave 60 grams per day, which I don't know. I've never, I don't, I don't know, it sounds a lot.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
But they gave them nuts over a 14-week period, and they actually saw an increase in sperm motility. So these little guys are just swimming, like they are racing.
It made me laugh because I just thought in my head as you said nuts, I was like, eating nuts to help your nuts.
But there are also loads of other foods, so I don't know if it's going to be that after listening to this podcast, loads of guys are going to run to their local supermarket and be buying nuts and just thinking
buying walnuts. Yeah.
Walnuts, yeah, it's going to be walnuts. You go into the supermarket and there's just none left.
Or they'll just eat ultra processed food if they don't want kids.
Yeah, that's very true. They're going to impact their diet, but.
And also, apparently, if you, I don't know how true this is, I don't know if you know, Yaz, but there's like that myth that if you wear like super tight boxers, but isn't that like not actually a myth? Like, apparently, like really tight boxers, like if you wear them all the time, like is actually bad for your sperm.
I feel like that one is probably, it could actually affect sperm because of scrotal heating. And some studies have shown that there is an association of lower sperm quality with tight undies or like your little briefs that are quite tight. But I think these studies need to be looked into a little bit more and just like on a wider sample size, because I think they're probably biased of who they're testing that on.
I feel like that is true though. It's the same thing with like women. Like you have to wear, you have to be mindful of like what fabric your underwear and like how tight it is. Literally for that reason, it does increase heat down there, cause problems for males and females.
Yeah, definitely. Really. And I think there's so many misconceptions about fertility in men, and another's like kind of being on bicycles, cycling more. They think that's associated with a lower sperm count. But I think they've debunked that and actually it's not really affecting them. But I guess maybe more research could be done with that one.
Yeah, super interesting. Okay, so the takeaway is eat walnuts and don't have tight boxers. Not
basically
too tight.
To help your little guys swim if you want kids. But go for Taz's option if you don't want kids.
Nuts, and nuts.
Eat what you want.
Well, thanks so much for that, Yaz. I'm intrigued. Maybe diet does have such a big impact on our lives and not just our weight.
Okay guys, I've got some hot laboratory for you this week. Someone has kindly written in, so I'm gonna read out their email and just tell me what you think. Okay, so it starts.
Let's go.
Hi guys, absolutely loving the podcast so far, particularly the goss about the professor at the boat party and the cheeky scientist. I have some goss for you and hope you have a chance to feature because the laboratory is hot, lol.
We love some good goss.
So, long story short, my university was involved in apparently, quote, the worst instances of research fraud uncovered in a British university.
Fraud. And it's close to home because it's a British university.
Gosh.
I feel like this stuff happens at the big unis in the US, but I've not heard about this in a British uni. So go on, carry on reading. I'm really intrigued.
Okay. Now, just to preface, I was a mere PhD student at the time and I wasn't in the same lab, but I had friends who were. One particular friend, let's call her Abby, was a researcher in the lab. She started witnessing questionable practices as a result of a high-pressure environment to get research out. Oh, I feel like this is just classic. Already I'm starting, I'm like, it's just classic academia.
Yeah.
Like, you need a certain amount of papers every year. Mm-hmm. I just see where it's going already.
But what does it mean about questionable? Do you know what I mean? Because for me, I think I do some questionable things in the lab. But none of that is like fraud. Like, not saying like I don't make up any of my data. But you know, sometimes I'll just do something and I looked like at myself and think, why did you just do that? So what are they even getting at? Like what kind of questionable things?
I'm guessing it's like cherry picking your data, like, you know, so like definitely I know people who have literally had their supervisor say to them, like, change this graph, change this data, like get rid of that, take that out the plot, just so it fits like what that it looks how they want it to look. Like I've like honestly, I've seen that so many times. I think that's probably what she's referring to. I might be wrong, but I would say that's what she's referring to. Or like making them do like certain stuff in the lab that like they shouldn't really be doing. I don't know.
I think that's such a common theme as well. Do you know what another, I think I've spoken about all my pet peeves on this podcast today, but another one of my pet peeves is the fact that we can't publish negative data. Like, yeah. if we do something and it doesn't work, then it's not going to be accepted in a publication. I'm like, why? Like, it saves data from then doing the same thing. Yeah. Like, it saves time, I think.
Can it not? I'm literally in the process of writing up, like, a negative results paper.
No, I think, like, generally, like, people don't tend to publish stuff unless it's, like, they've found something or positive. Like, they don't, unless, like if the whole thing is just... We did all this and we found nothing. Usually people don't publish that, right? Like,
yeah, and even if they do, people don't want to read it. Like,
I was thinking that. I actually definitely wanted to make my own journal. And because also, that's a whole thing, like about the whole paywalls and stuff, like it not being accessible. Because literally,
yeah,
I think if we've got enough listeners and they agree, we can make a negative results journal. I think it would pop off.
So Cultured Journal.
But anyway, right, let me hear about the questionable things.
Yeah. Oh, I've just read ahead. Yeah, like it's not what you're talking about, Liv, just cherry picking results, okay? Right. One time she was pretty sure she saw someone copying, pasting, inverting and editing gel images to then label them as something completely different in the manuscript.
Oh my God, stop.
Imagine if you actually saw someone do that in your lab. What the hell would you do?
I'd be like, girl, what are you doing? What are you doing? Stop right
but
there.
But how do you witness that? Because surely someone's going to do that where, like, you're not in the room. Or, like, they've just seen them. They know what they ran a gel.
Not if everyone in the lab is doing it.
But isn't that obvious? Mm. Aren't there softwares to tell if there's something that's been, like, cropped or, like, a gel image? So, also, listeners, if you're not in science...
Guys, this might be where AI comes in.
Yeah, it could probably detect it. But if you're not in science, a gel image is just one way to detect... either DNA or protein, and you just take an image of your gel using the software and it will show you bands at a certain height. So I'm assuming they've edited it out so that it's like changed either the height of the DNA or protein. Like, I don't know what gel or whatever they've done. They've like completely changed it. And
well, no, if you think about it, right? So you like image a gel and then that features as like a figure in your manuscript because it shows something or it shows a presence or absence of something in your sample, right? So what they've done is taken a picture of a gel and they've like edited it, inverted it, and basically then claimed that it's a picture of something completely different. So yeah, that's like completely fraudulent. You can't do that.
Oh my God, yeah, that's like completely different to cherry picking the data, like playing around with your data a little bit. I mean, that's also really bad, but like completely just like falsifying a figure is madness. I could never, I would be 5 years from publishing that paper, I'd still be like waiting to be caught
out. How do these people sleep at night?
Because not to like, also surely if someone found that out, that's the end of your career, because how on earth could people then trust your data going forwards? I don't understand. I would not take that risk after all these years.
So did they find anything else in this? Does it go on?
Yeah. So she thought it was a bit weird, but it was the first time that she noticed anything dodgy in the lab and she didn't say anything. But then later on, she saw a different colleague trying to pass off rat tissue as human tissue in the manuscript for the purposes of having more relevant research. Well,
how do you do that?
Well, I think, like, they obviously just took a picture of the tissue and then was like, oh, this is human tissue.
Sorry, that's really funny.
That's so bad.
That is so stupid.
Comparable. But...
Well, I guess so. Like, I guess it depends on your research question. But, yeah, like, I think a lot of people would want to pass off, like... rodent results as human results, of course. That's
they
mad.
They haven't even done the experiments. Like, this is actual just like making it up as you go along.
Literally, which
is,
making it's
not,
it up.
You like you said, it's not cherry picking.
Wait, how would they get away with that? Because surely, like, if you're doing like a human study, you have to like talk about the ethics in your like ethics approval, all of that, like in your paper.
Like,
so
you would just be like, living a complete lie, surely, by being like, a complete lie. It was done under these ethics. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. What? That's the ethics crazy. Weren't even real. Like, they just wrote it, or like nothing got approved. Could you imagine?
Oh my God, just made up the whole study, like from start to finish.
If I was the scientist doing that, I would honestly be stressed.
Say, I'd quit. I couldn't take the stress. I literally could not take it. I would have to quit.
Basically, she really started to doubt the validity of the work in her lab. And she was actually really worried about whether it would affect her and rub off on her and then discredit her. So what did she do? She reported it to the university.
Good on her.
Yeah, good for her.
In the terms of being a snitch, like, is that also acceptable? Because this is obviously, I think this absolutely. Is wrong, and you should snitch on your colleagues if they're doing this. But also, snitches get stitches. Like, like, surely they're gonna know who the one that snitched on your, like, if you're in a lab,
so,
and this is also
I wouldn't care. I'd be like, yeah, it was me.
Yeah, I wouldn't care.
Do you know what I mean? If it's like, if you're in that lab, like, that's gonna be hard, because if that PI is your boss, they're gonna.
I mean, I think the point is, you can see why someone wouldn't snitch, but that still doesn't make it okay. Like, you definitely can see, like, some people wouldn't, because they'd be like, I'm in this lab doing my PhD for the next 3 years. If I snitch, then maybe I'm not gonna get my PhD. So you understand why they don't do it. Yeah. But yeah. Ultimately, the right thing to do is to snitch.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's also like, if it does come out and they are found out, then surely it would then, like she's like mm-hmm. it says in this email, it potentially could discredit mm-hmm. the work that mm-hmm. she's done. So I would be
so you get like fraud boys that. in the real world, like in non-science world, just like everyday world, where they're just like doing loads of fraudulent stuff, and obviously you'll go to jail for that, but do you go to jail for doing this kind of stuff in the science world?
No, you do actually. Like, some people actually have got prison time for, but like, it's like really like, it's a lot of the time they say, was there intent there? What was the reason why you did it? If there was intent there, then you can get jail time. Like, it's literally, I think it's so bad. Like, mad. The whole, do you remember the whole autism scandal and like how they made association with the vaccines and autism? Mm. And like,
yeah.
Everyone was like, that's like on a foundation.
I think that's the thing, because that genuinely probably resulted in like a lot of people like not getting the vaccinated, which ultimately does exactly. lead to people getting ill, and there some in some cases people dying. And then it's like, who's responsible for those deaths? Like, ultimately, yeah, if there's intent there, they are responsible for those deaths. If yeah. it gets that yeah. deep.
So obviously you're gonna receive jail time for that. You Whoa. Know,
especially if you're saying effect. If it's like human tissue and you're saying, oh, maybe this treatment helped this, and then it was really in a yeah. rat and you've not done any human trials or anything, that's really
that's so
that's
bad.
Wild.
Yeah. Okay, so basically they did this massive internal audit of 60 papers all under this same lab and found 6 fraudulent papers. Since then, the lab lead has had to stand down because he was an author on all of these papers, despite the fact that he threw all the lab techs and researchers under the bus by blaming it all on them and claiming he had no involvement.
Of course someone would do that, do you know what I mean? Being like, of nah, course, bro, yeah. I did yeah. nothing of the sort. I'm innocent. But like, if you're running the lab and it's your ideas, surely you check and be like, how did you get to this? That's really cool yeah. data. Have you checked X, like, or Y? Can you just do this just to make sure yeah. we run it, maybe?
Exactly.
Like, you're complicit. Defo.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Also, you as a lab lead have, like, responsibility. Like, I think you... I then went on to... There's a... article on this situation, guys, and I then went and saw the article, because you know that the beginning of the email,
there's a whole article on it,
yeah, at the beginning of the email, or they write in inverted commas, the worst instances of research fraud uncovered in British history university. I then put that into Google and an article comes up, so
Hold on. I need to find this. So, do we know what British uni it is? Can we name and shame or no?
From the,
Okay, Yaz, go find out, go find out.
Another thing came up and was like, an investigation by the BBC in 2017 found that at least 300 allegations of research misconduct had been reported at 23 out of 24 Russell Group unis between 2011 and 2016. So I don't think this is like, that's obviously not the same thing, but there's this must be going on a lot. I don't know what one would be like specific to... I have one that says there's a top geneticist should resign over his team's laboratory fraud.
Might be that one.
And that was at UCL, University College London.
Yeah, I see that one.
And he's blaming his junior lab staff. And two investigations at UCL found no evidence that he intended to commit or aware of the fraud. Like, so he's just lying.
It's just wild, though. I honestly think that... like, as a lab lead, you have a responsibility to make sure what you and your lab are putting out is legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And if it's gone on for so long, I just think that is so sus.
Absolutely. And I do think, like you I said, it is like the lab lead's responsibility. Like, my supervisors, anyone who's ever supervised me has always been, like, they do let me do all of my own research and they do believe things that I say them, but like I do see them putting in little sanity checks every now and then. Like sometimes they'll be like, oh, can you send me this data, like just for the purpose of reproducibility, like let me see if I can get the same results. Like, and I know it's not because they like don't think that's reproducible, but they do their job and their due diligence of checking.
That's important.
Now wait, I've just on if this is it, if this is what we're seeing, the professor who was the head of the lab in this study, it's on The Guardian, so we'll link it, his post earns him £380,000 a year.
Shut up.
Like his job. And then he's just doing fraud.
No way. That's mad. Who's earning this much in academia, please?
Yeah, I thought you just get paid from your grants and stuff, like $380K.
I reckon he probably just thought he was going to get away with it and just carry on doing it. I'm not going to lie, because why would you risk like your 300 and whatever K job by putting in a like fraudulent figures in a paper? I don't know. I would not risk it.
I mean, like I said, I think that's probably how he's ended up earning so much money is the fraudulent thing. So he's literally being rewarded probably for his like fraudulent behavior. So of course you're going to keep on doing it if you're like being rewarded by it. So like, that's basic neuroscience. So yeah, exactly. Like that's actually crazy. That is crazy.
Nah, what? If this is the guy, I think he still works at the unis.
Stop.
I'm on University of London and his name comes up. He's a board of trustees. He's got a CBE, an MA, PhD.
Oh my God.
All these things. He's deputy vice chancellor. He's held the position, a post he's held at the university since 2003. It doesn't say that he's been dismissed. But I haven't, no this way. Is like a quick look.
This is just rolling into the back of my head right now.
Literally, what the hell? How is that even possible? Honestly, I swear, nobody gets fired in academia, no matter what you do. Like, honestly, the stories I've heard that one day I'm going to tell on this podcast, and Taz and Yaz know what they are. This, honestly, the things that these professors do is actually insane, and they just do not get fired. And it's crazy. It angers me.
I think they do. I think the reason is their gender and their ethnicity play a very big role. And I do think that can be a very overarching comment. And obviously, I'm not saying that's the case in every situation.
Like, one, I 100% agree with you. Like, there's situations that Yaz and Taz know that I've been in where, like, this person should 100%, or, like, not even that I've been in, but also that I know about, where this person should have 100% be fired. They've had investigations done into him. And I cannot honestly tell you the only reason they're keeping this man in their faculty is because he earns them so much reputation and he earns so much money. That's literally the only reason, because there's genuinely no reason on this earth that these people should not be fired. Like, if it was in industry, like, they would be out the door. Like, I just don't understand. It actually angers me, like, genuinely. So firstly, I really hope that this person has managed to
remove themselves from the situation and obviously get away from this lab for, I mean, I don't even need to say why, like for their own mental health, like their own sanity, everything, run. But obviously, I feel like we've all kind of hinted that we've had our own experience of this. We've all seen it happening. So obviously it is quite common. So I don't know, what do you guys think we should, like, if there's any of the listeners who are experiencing this, what would your guys' advice be to them?
I'd say call it out. Obviously, I made the joke about, like, snitches get stitches. That is, like, get past that. You're an adult, and if you're seeing things that are wrong, call it out, because it's inappropriate. It's only going to make your life worse in the long run. If people then find it out after you've been in that lab and done the research, like, if you don't mention anything now, your work's not going to be credible in the future. And I think that's just going to come down on you. Or if you know other labs are doing it, some investigation needs to be done. And like you say, Liv, I don't know, if it's an internal investigation, it might not be as thorough. So if you can raise awareness to other people, like journalists, that's probably the best way to get, like, raise awareness of what's going on. And then maybe external investigations might come from it. I don't actually know the processes that go on with things like this, so I can't really comment on that.
I personally think that,
yeah, just call it out.
I personally think that obviously it's really tough, but something like fraudulent data and manuscripts and things like that, like, you as a scientist, you do have a duty of responsibility to call that kind of stuff out, and it's a reflection of you as a good scientist in order to do that. Obviously, it's easier for us to just sit at the end of our mics and say, oh yeah, you need to call it out, but usually universities will have, like, an anonymous helpline, or obviously reach out to someone maybe you trust that's in higher management, and so they can escalate it in that sort of sense. But yeah, at the end of the day, you definitely have a responsibility to call it out. Please don't turn a blind eye to those sorts of things.
Yeah, and stay tuned for our new journal that might be launching in, like, 5 years time, the negative results journal. So if you feel like you are not getting the data you want, please don't do any fraud and manipulate your data. Just post it in our new journal. It'll be free, open access.
So me and Taz are just going to stop Yaz right there. Me and Taz are just going to say Yaz, stop right there. But no, on a serious note,
a good idea. I think I'm onto it.
I think you're always onto good ideas, Yaz. But no, on a serious note, I too agree with all of your advice. And yeah, also feel free to reach out to any of us, like, if you want to discuss anything further. Like, we're all always here to talk. I feel like that's the reason all of us started our accounts, is to kind of, like, talk to people in similar situations, and, like, hopefully,
yeah,
I think we all hope to, like, advise people. I mean, that was literally one of the reasons for starting our gossip section. Like, we make it all a joke, we make it all funny, but at the end of the day, like, we do want to give you guys, like, helpful advice. And also, one more thing to say is, like, Yaz dreams big, but we do have big dreams for this podcast, and we're excited to see how it goes. So yeah, stay tuned for next week's episode, guys, and we will see you next time.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to the So Cultured podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Make sure you listen in next week for more science and tech updates and the hottest laboratory.
You can stay up to date with us in between episodes by following us on Instagram and X at So Cultured podcast.
See you back here same time next week. Just watch me.